Hey guys, welcome back to Crockcast Podcast. Wait, no, wrong podcast. Reptile ramblings. Force of habit.
We'll get through a couple of those.
All right. As always, I'm your co-host Nate.
And I'm Brian McDowell.
And let's get started off with a little recap since last time I recorded. Brian, let's start with you.
Oh, man. Well, I mean, recap was, you know, we just talked a little bit about our origins, but really, I'll take a little bit of a spin and just say how we were just talking a little bit ago, how this week just flew by, but hopefully this upcoming week just flies by until the upcoming Friday and then Saturday, Sunday for the aforementioned Colubrid Fest.
Yeah, definitely looking forward to this upcoming weekend. So,
yeah.
But on my end, a few things. At the moment, I keep more than Bryant does, and one of the few things I keep is a false water cobra. So, sure, Zach Loffman will be giddy to talk about that with me whenever we see each other. Hopefully, I'll finally get that book signed.
Oh, yeah, you'll be bringing your book, right? Good, man. Yeah. That'd be sweet.
But in other news, a few nights ago, I was going in to feed the falsie, and he was apparently very hungry. So he basically shot himself completely out of the cage, and he was on the floor coming right at me, completely fearless. Because, you know, falsie. Mm-hmm. And he got in between, basically the way he shot out, he got in between me and the hook, so I just had the feeding tongs. So I was trying to fend him off. And managed to get all the way past the feeding tongs. Basically leaped off the floor past the, like, 2-foot-long feeding tongs, and I don't know if you can really see it, but managed to get a grip of my finger.
Bite alert.
Yeah. Fortunately, I think he only got me with the... Yeah. Fortunately, I think he only got me with the front part of his mouth and didn't get. I mean, he literally just bat, let go pretty much instantly. So I think he only got me with the front part of his mouth. Not the rear fangs. I'm pretty sure I didn't get any Duvernoy secretions in there because I've just been looking at it, monitoring it closely. Pretty much nothing. It bled a bit, quite a bit when I first got it. And the day after, I was just working a lot with my hands and the scab kind of reopened up. I just slapped a bandage on there and seems all right. So it's been a few days, no swelling, no sign of infection. So I'm lucky on that account because otherwise I could have ended up looking like Morty from that one Rick and Morty episode where they go on a combat plan and he gets his arm swollen up.
Oh, dude, Morty gets messed up so many times. But, you know, good on you for moderating it and, like, not just checking it over, but, you know, no sensations, no tingling, nothing like that.
Yeah, I got lucky on that one, though. So, thing is, I got to find a way where when that guy is hungry, he doesn't just go right at me. So, then again, it is a falsie, so it goes to the territory.
It does, and you know, our snakes, they're just used to being very hungry critters. And then you open that cage, tub, whatever it happens to be, they know one or two things are happening. Either they're getting pulled out or they're getting presented food. So yeah, it's how to train your dragon in real life.
Well, thing is, I kind of spaced out his feeding a little bit this time, so he was actually... I went into my reptile house, reptile hut, reptile shed, whatever you want to call it, a few hours before that. Mm. And he had just started banging on the glass, basically banging on the glass saying, "Food monkey, where's food? Bring me food." So I knew he was already.
Oh, so you definitely. Yeah. You caused a bit of that response. Still, it's good. You know, it's good to space out.
The thing is, I fed him. Thing is, he's like a 5-foot snake right now. Gave him 3 full-grown mice, and the next day I open up and he starts basically begging for food again. So I'm like, oh, I guess tonight I'll probably thaw out a walleye fillet, give them to that. So,
hey, I mean, they're athletes for sure. That metabolism just goes for sure.
Yeah. So,
because they're kind of, right. I mean, obviously with Zach Loftman's book and all, they're just dips at it, right? And like, and they cover, they have a big. They have a big range, and for the most part, they don't really brumate in any part of the range. Maybe in some parts of Argentina, but for the most part, they're just always, their metabolism is very constant because the environment is constant. It's just the seasonality change of dry or wet, really.
Yeah. I actually just listened to that Kluber and Kluberoid episode where it was all just about falsies this morning while I was mowing the lawn.
Mm.
And he was talking about their temperatures and stuff like that. Also, how diurnal they are. Like, he's noticed that, and he talked to people, actual scientists in the field as well, who basically say, basically, as soon as the lights go out, they just go, basically just shut down and go to sleep. So they're actually a very diurnal snake, which is different from what we have around here for the most part.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even our rat snakes will, showcase nocturnal, a nature when it gets like hot. Like I remember last year around this time in September when it was still pretty hot. I mean, we had like a heat wave going on or something, and I was driving in a local town here at night, and then I see like a long slinky figure on like a roundabout curve. I'm like, is that what I think it was? So I put it in reverse, I go back, and in the headlights is just a 3-foot rat snake just cruising along the neighborhood at night. I'm like, oh, score.
Yeah. Yeah. So, actually, now I think about it, most of my aquatic snakes that I think about are mostly diurnal. Because most diurnal snakes we have around here are probably Nerodia. What do you say?
Yeah. But it's funny. You go down southeast, and like a lot of people just road cruise. Like an absolute crap ton of Nerodia and aquatics. Like, they tend to be very nocturnal. And even here in Illinois, when I go to Southern Illinois around this time in the fall, I'll road cruise or hike up, like plain bellies at night, like pretty far away from water too. They tend to be very far away from water, plain bellies, but
yeah,
that is kind of funny. Some older folks around here that are into herps, they say they tend to see eastern hognoses at night. Like, they say they tend to have they're quite nocturnal. Like, I've never really put it to practice, but I don't know. Maybe because of toads tend to be nocturnal, so it kind of makes sense, but I've never practiced it.
Interesting to think about.
Yeah.
So
I mean, they're rare anyway for your part, in your ways.
Yeah, looking at INET, there's pretty much none around my general area. You have to get like either far up to the northwest part of Ohio or far down to the southwest part of Ohio to actually find them. Now, thankfully, Southwest actually has those orangish colored ones, so that's kind of cool.
Gorgeous ones, beautiful ones, dude. And that's funny you touched on that phenotype, because maybe you saw on my Instagram, but like in April, a buddy and I, we went to a kind of a hill prairie region, and we found a hognose, and it was an orange phenotype. It was a dusty orange kind of looking thing, but it was still orange, and that's probably the rarest phenotype you can find in Illinois for a hognose.
So would that have been like Southern Illinois or more central part of Illinois?
No, thankfully central, like literally just maybe an hour and a half away from me down southwest of me.
Okay. But speaking of hour and a half away, well, maybe a little bit further, Indianapolis. Indianapolis coming up. A few days. A week, basically. Probably only a few days when this comes out.
Basically, one of the biggest junction function of nerds in the Midwest that you will see.
Yeah, outside of Tinley.
Outside of Tinley, which is, I'm glad they did it in September and not October, because that'd be very tough to the side on where to go to. So this was perfect timing on their end for Clint and Zach.
Yeah. So I'm already going to be picking some stuff up from Zach. I already ran to them, picking up some locality Florida Kings. So
that's right. That would be cool, man.
So I'm going to get 1.1 Hernando County, 1.1 Hendy, and what was the third one? I'm getting like one off female. Let me see.
That's how it starts, dude. Get a pair here, a pair there, and then before you know it, you're a Lampro nut. Launching into Lampro space.
See here. Probably. No, not that. Probably Dade County female. Yeah. So like a 1.1 Hernando, 1.1 Hendry County, and 0.1 Dade County.
Very cool, man. And like hatchlings, you know, is what you're saying. Like, you know, young.
Already started. So probably be what? Maybe 2 months by the time I pick them up.
Yeah, it's insane how small King Stinks and Milk Stinks can be when they come out.
Yeah, but I might pick a few other things up. I do have, I literally have this just one random female northwestern garter snake. So that'd be Thamnophis ornoides. So a little bit of backstory about those guys. They're located in like the coastal regions of extreme northern California and coastal Oregon, coastal Washington, and up into the coastal parts of British Columbia. So when I say northwest, they really mean northwest. So,
oh yeah,
I was just happened to be on North Market a few months ago, just scrolling through the auction sections looking for anything other than some sort of ball python, and I saw her, a proven female, so she's full grown adult, pop up, and I was like, what the heck? Put a bid in on it, bid on her, and apparently no one else decided to bid on her. I was literally just looking at the phone for like the next 2 hours going like, okay, is anyone else going to put down another $5 more for this thing? It's like, oh, okay, I guess I got it now. So
that's how it goes.
So if there's anyone at Kaluber Fest who is selling male Thamnophis ornoides, please let me know. I need to get him. I feel like I need to get a male just to throw in there with her, because I'm really starting to enjoy her. I'm not going to lie. She is a cool snake. So I've never kept garters before. I mean, I've seen them out in the yard all the time because, you know, it's a garter snake. They're everywhere. So I'm just really starting to enjoy her. So I'm hoping to get a male. If there are any there, I don't know if there are going to be any there, but if there are, I'll definitely pick up one of those. And I do have one extra cage that would be perfect for another pair of garters. So I was thinking maybe like Oregon Red Side, one of those Western red colored localities. Maybe some other locality that's a cool coloration. I don't know about Lake Chiapas because those guys get bigger. So I don't know if the cage I have would be big enough for a pair. It probably is, but I don't know for certain. But yeah, probably look for some more garters.
Yeah, I mean, like I touched on earlier, you know, underrated for sure. And like, I would say they're underrated just because we do take them for granted. And like, you know, it's just a garter snake, but they're so variable, and especially the ornoides, you know, super variable. They come in so many phases and colors. And like, I'm glad you touched on the Lake Chapala ones, you know, very, like, talk about obscure, right? I mean, they're getting more common, but they're pretty obscure. It'd be cool to see some Western black-necked garters, you know, like just the high contrast ones you see like in West Texas and like New Mexico, Arizona. If I wanted to get a garter, those would probably be the ones to go after. Or like an obscure Mexican species. But yeah, for people out there, you can't go wrong with garters. Really, you know, give them a try. They're a great snake, very social, which is just kind of what you're alluding to with the cohab aspect. They're very social for snakes.
Yeah. See, so if you're watching on YouTube and I meant to share the video file on Spotify, but apparently I have to do that separately. So from now on, I'm going to try and upload a video file separately to YouTube. But I don't know if there's a way to zoom in on this or not. But yeah, that's kind of
like off the web.
Yeah, it's just off the web. But this one looks almost exactly like the one I have. So it, in terms of garter snakes, this is a very plain Jane looking garter snake. And she's fairly, she's bigger than just about any wild garter I found around where I live. And where I have around here is Thamnophis or Talus or Talus. So just run the Middle Eastern garters. But she is bigger. And honestly, in this picture, it's a little bit different with her. Because with her, I've noticed little bits of darker scales randomly scattered around in the slate gray area. So it almost looks like someone took a double chocolate chip cookie, you know, like a chocolate chip cookie that's like chocolate flour instead of plain old flour, right?
Okay, I'm with you.
So she has a little bit of darker splotches in the dark areas of scalation. So
very neat. I mean, yeah, relatively plain, but you know, big garter is a sight to see, and that's neat. Yeah, I hope you do find a male for her. So. That'd be cool. That'd be a good quest to find.
Yeah. We'll see if there are any. But that's about mostly what I'm thinking about getting. I mean, the cage I have that would fit a pair of garters would also be good for something arboreal, like a pair of rhino rats, something like that. But at the same time, I don't want to spend that much money.
Yeah, it's very tough. It's going to be a challenge for me, man, because like I said, I'm basically probably going to get my cherry popped going to the show, you know, dipping into.
Did you have to phrase toes. It like this? There's just going to be some mom driving her kid to school going like, hey, you want to listen to the reptile show? Oh, no, Jimmy, close your ears.
I mean, it's true.
Talking about probing.
Not yet, Jimmy, not yet. But, you know, I am quite open. You know, I'm a little selective. Funny enough, on the there's an official Kaluber Fest group on Facebook. If anyone's interested in joining, it's very, very easy to join. Just don't be a dick. But I posted out there, you know, some species. Obviously, my ladder rats, just in case if anybody got them. Basically, I'm targeting old world rat snakes. But if not old world, then good old North America, like some pits or. You know, I have even considered some Lampropeltis, but yeah, I'm kind of an open book, which I wish I wasn't, because I would like to be a bit more selective, but we'll see how the show goes. The Zirkles, obviously the Zirkles will be there, and they're fantastic. Rob and Amy are fantastic.
Yeah. So.
Well, they'll probably have your garter. They'll probably have your garter.
Yeah, I actually reached out to Zach about that. And he said, yeah, look at the circles. So they'll be the ones that have the guards. So,
yeah.
So, but speaking of Zach, that's one of the, as for me, that's one of the big reasons to go there is to finally meet some other reptile podcasters in the flesh. So,
yeah. I mean, Clint, I never greeted Clint formally. I only greeted Zach formally at Tinley and obviously got my book signed from him. And even, you know, shot the shit with him on some Dipsadis, how we're like, oh, it'd be so cool to go to Argentina or, you know, go to South America, but, you know, money and time, but they're cool people. And, you know, I like what they talk. I like what they talk about on Kaluber and Kaluberoid Radio. It's a great podcast. I listened to the most recent one they had. They actually had Rob Zirkle on talking about mainly, beauty snakes, which are cool. They're not necessarily my cup of tea, mainly because they are pretty flighty for the most part. They're very flighty, and they're big. They're big, long snakes, yeah. And I'm like, for a first snake, I'm like, nah, I'm okay. I'm okay with that.
Yeah. I've thought about them in the past before, and I kind of came to the same conclusion as you did, so.
But they're gorgeous, man. They're gorgeous.
And then I got a full slaughter cobra, so.
Yeah, so you kind of got your big colubrid category already. And you got, you know, the Creebo.
And a yellowtail Creebo, so.
Yeah. That one I didn't know about at all. So that was a pretty good secret. I didn't know you had a Kree though.
Yeah, got a few months ago at an expo. And this was before I knew that the market for them has kind of fallen out. Apparently this is like right after the price dropped on them. So I was going to that random expo thinking, oh, they're like 900 a piece or something like that. And I saw one for 495 and I was like, deal, done, get it. Like a full grown adult male. And I got it. And I was just on Facebook like 2 days later and I saw someone, it might have been Westmoreland posting about it, but someone posting about the market for these guys and how the prices have dropped by basically half. And I was like, ah, man, I thought I had a deal. I pay full market price anyways, but I'm not complaining. He's a cool snake. So.
No. I mean, they're still up there in price in Morph Market. And like that's not a bad price, dude. That's really good. Like if it's sub 500 for any Darmarkin, you're in the clear in my book, you know. Is it wild caught? Do you know?
I believe it's long-term captive. So it's a full-grown adult. And the reason I got him when I did was I was thinking of lining up some caging. That would be like in the 8-foot category. Mm-hmm. That kind of fell through. But thing is, I had this empty space in the back of my shed that I kind of set reserved for maybe some large lizard or something like that. That's like 10 foot long by 4 foot wide by 6.5 feet tall. That had kind of... It's basically a loft over the back of the shed. I just dropped a wall down in front of the loft. So basically forms his own little room. And I was like, you know what? He's currently sitting in this temporary 4-foot cage and he's basically bent in half in there.
Yeah.
May as well move him out. Now he's in his whole new big enclosure. And I tell you what, when I first moved him in there, he started in. I just tried to go up the back corner. And I just look at him going like, I have no need to ever get a king cobra. This looks almost exactly like a king cobra. Gets about, right. Well, maybe not as big as a very large king cobra, but it gets plenty big enough. And it fills the same ecological niche, and it's not venomous. So why would I get Ophiophagus when I can have a dry mark on? Why would I get a snake eater when I can have a forest emperor? So,
you know, what more can you ask for? Basically, you got your own little Kreebo corner. You got your Kreebo corner in the shed.
Yeah. So maybe sometime if I'm doing the video call and say, like, my phone or something like that in my shed, I could show you around there. So,
oh, dude, that would be a pleasure. And again, Darmarkin, even though they are big snakes, I would not be mindful. You know, I've done the research. I would not mind even picking up a pair or one. But again, we'll see.
Yeah, I would think about getting a female for him, but they don't have the space for another full grown Darmarkin at the moment. He's kind of a one off that I thought was it still kind of is a bargain.
Yeah.
And I've always kind of wanted a dry mark on for a while now. It's never been highest priority hurt for me, but I remember reading some like Care Guide and Reptiles magazine probably 8 years ago when I first saw yellowtail Kreebos. First time I ever heard about yellowtail Kreebos. And I was like, okay, these are cool snakes. So that's always been in the back of my mind.
Yeah. Why not give them a shot? They are cool snakes. Very cool snakes, man.
Yeah, and doing some research on like the phylogenetics of it, which you know, phylogenetics. What does Melisandre in Game of Thrones say? It's like phylogenetics is dark and full of terrors. But yeah, those guys are apparently they're the same actual species as the Texas indigos. They're just a different subspecies. Which I thought Texas indigos were more closely related to the Eastern indigos, to Cooperi, but. Apparently they're not, so.
No, I forgot how long that changed. But, yeah, they're are they still a subspecies. I know they're Melanurus, but Erebenis, I think that's what their subspecies is. But, you know, Melanurus. It's Melanurus everything for the most part with indigos. When I was in Oaxaca, Mexico, I saw Rubidus, and, you know, that's still kind of, quote-unquote, honored or valid, and that's under Melanurus too.
Yeah, that'd be the blacktail, or is that the Mexican indigo?
Yeah, like say Mexican Indigo. I call them Mexican Indigo, Mexican West Coast, or Red Tail. It's whatever. Just yeah, Mexican Indigo.
Yeah,
they're probably my favorite. They tend to stay a tad bit smaller, and then they have, you know, the gorgeous red face, even more gorgeous than Cooperi, in my opinion. And then they have the black and white face. But yeah, you're right. They do look very cobra-like. I mean, oh, and they're strong. Like we were talking about it earlier, just how they're like just iron. Like, I mean, it's hard to describe. Like cables of iron.
Steel, cords of steel iron.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cords of iron going all biblical Leviathan on you.
Very stiff. Holy serpents. Yeah. But no, man. Thoroughly excited with just the prospect of getting my first proper captive snake and doing everything right for it. But, you know, also while, you know, being in Coluberfest, this is a big opportunity, obviously, to just, like you said, network and, you know, shoot the shit with like-minded people, individuals. And relatively good weather. You know me, I'm looking all about the weather because we're tentatively hoping to do some side quests while in Indiana, which is part of Marion County. So there's some good herbs to be found around.
Yeah. You're specifically hoping to find Kirtland snakes, right?
That is the big target. And I think it's very doable. There's Kirtlands, there's like gray rats. So there are salamanders. There's actually a decent plethora of salamanders. There's like two lines, you know, Eurasia, some ambystomids like Jeffersons, which would be a lifer, smallmouths, which is always great to see again. Even I think maybe spotted. Of course, it might be too warm for them. It just depends, but who knows?
Yeah. I'm kind of curious, because actually Ohio right now is still kind of in drought conditions. It's literally been several weeks since we last had rain. Granted, we're looking at sometime this upcoming week finally getting some rain and a decent amount in the first half of the week. But I'm curious, have you had the same conditions out in Illinois? And if that same holds true in Indiana?
Yes, man. Like it seems like overall the Eastern Midwest has experienced, you know, like drought conditions. Like you said, today there was I wouldn't even call it a shower, just a couple sprinkles here and there. It's very overcast today, but yeah, relatively speaking, the early part of this fall, very dry. So I think, like you said, should be maybe some thunderstorms in the next couple of days. So
yeah,
let's hope.
But I've been thinking about looking at the weather. I'm thinking maybe Sunday afternoon or evening, shoot down to one of the local state parks, and that's centered around one of the local rivers. And seeing if, since the river is so shrunk down, if that's kind of forced the herps to be kind of more concentrated around it, see if it makes it kind of easier to find specifically queen snakes. So,
queen snakes, I think, are one that is going to be it's highly likely we'll find queen snakes. Obviously, nothing's a given in herping, but I think we can find queen snakes because there's the White River that intersects in Indianapolis, and I think in some sections or most of it's like rocky bottom.
I'll specifically talk about like sometime tomorrow going down to one of my local state parks.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, dude, I'm super locked in, so I'm excited. And yeah, that'd be awesome. Get some herping out. I have not had, you know, the fortune to herp too much. Last week, I think right before we hopped on, I took my girlfriend's son and I to I don't know what you call these. I guess a wildlife safari park, but it's it showcases native animals. So like, you know, for Illinois, historically, we would have had elk. There's elk there. Bison, black bears, mountain lions, just a whole lot, right? And then they have their herp center collection, and you know, the property is around wooded areas, and it was actually a BioBlitz event. So basically, you know, just kind of with INAT or Herp Mapper, you just go out in the wooded trails and whatever fauna you find, take a photo, categorize it. And that's what we did. We went on a mountain bike trail in a woodlot and found American toad, cricket frogs. And then the highlight was a little gray rat snake on the crawl, just cruising along. And that was pretty cool because my girlfriend's son, I'm kind of getting him to like snakes. He naturally does like snakes. He just, you know, doesn't want to touch them. But he was like, oh, my God, grab it. I was like, no, let's see what it does first. And, it, you know, it was just cruising. It saw us. It kind of flared a little bit its head and everything. But it was a nice looking rat snake. I'll probably I should have sent some photos to you, but it was pretty. It had a, you know, red interstitial skin. So it was kind of Western looking in that aspect.
Hmm. Interesting.
So yeah, it's kind of the rat snakes here. They're kind of in between. They can have a lot of pattern or be very, your very typical black rat.
Yeah. So where you're at in Illinois, which I don't know exactly where you are in Illinois, I'm guessing probably somewhere in the greater Chicagoland area, but are you kind of near the intersection of where like gray rats and Western rats kind of bump up against each other?
No, not even close. So I'm here in central Illinois, so far away from Chicagoland. And even in Chicagoland, in Chicagoland, you know, gray rats give way to, I guess, I think it's either Western or Eastern fox snakes, but regardless, they give way to fox snakes as filling in that ecological role. But, you know, if I go down southwest to St. Louis area, obviously the dividing range is still the Mississippi River to my knowledge. So
okay,
whenever I do my jaunt out in Missouri, then, you know, obviously I'm finding Western rats.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. So I was about to ask if you were in the greater Chicago area. I was about to ask if you ever been to the Wildlife Discovery Center.
Oh, in Lake Forest.
Yeah.
Before they shut down. No, yeah. I was not fortunate to see all of that. And I know how I was actually, I did an application to volunteer there, but just I never had the time for it. So it is a bummer that place shut down. It was run by some great folks, and you know, they had a freaking Komodo dragon of all things, you know?
So. Yeah. They had a lot of other stuff there. Yeah. I don't know if you know this, but my professor at college, the herd professor I had at college, his twin brother was the guy that ran the Wildlife Discovery Center.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, so I remember New Year's Eve 2019. My professor reached out to me. He's like, hey, my brother needs some saltwater crocodile moved down to Texas. I was wondering if you could drive it for him. It's like, okay. So a month later, I was driving a 6-foot salty in the back of my Jeep from Chicago to Houston. So,
oh, dude, that's awesome.
And like a few months, 6-7 months later, I was he asked me to go out there again and grab some juvenile Orinoco crocodiles for me to move for him. So,
jeez, man, where is he pulling this from? That's cool. You know, you get salties and then Orinocos. Wow.
Yeah. Well, he was on the IUCN crocodilian specialist board. So.
Oh, that's a sweet contact to know. That's pretty cool, especially regarding your love for crocs.
Yeah. So I'm hoping to have him on CrocCast sometime in the near future. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, for sure. And so obviously you said you took him down to Texas. So I would take it you took him to,
Crocodile Encounter. Yeah. Chris Theater's place.
So sweet, man.
The thing is,
he'll live a good life down there for sure.
Yeah. The thing is, if you ever talk to Dieter, what he thinks, what his favorite crocodilians is, he'll say like Niles, 11 out of 10 times. Yeah. And if you ask him about salties, he'll just go on a little mini rant about how much salties suck. if there's any Aussies in the audience, I know this will tick you off, but you know what? You guys are always talking about how great salties are with no reason to back it up. So take it how it is. But that salty I took down to him, Max, that's a salty that got him to like salties. So
yeah, cool. Well, there you go. There you go. I mean, I would say maybe, you know, I hear that they're pretty chicken shit when it comes to like cold temps.
Yeah, yeah. Nothing compared to Nas or even, well, especially the alligators, either species of alligator. So he told me that's part of his rant. It's like, if there's so much as a little bit of a cool front, they'll just roll over pretty much. So
yeah, which is, I guess it's to be expected, but it's kind of wild. It's wild. The Nile, it was wild how I started learning that they can be pretty cold tolerant, especially like South African populations, or just, you know, just in general.
Yeah, which it kind of makes sense because they just have this extensive range that goes well outside of the tropical zone. Granted, Africa, even Africa's subtropics and temperate zones are a lot warmer than the subtropics and temperate zones, say, like, here in North America. But still.
Yeah, yeah, they can handle some temps for sure. But, yeah, that's really cool, man. You brought some stuff down to town. I'm still optimistic of a fan. Always will be. Always will be.
Still need to get you down to Crocodile Encounter then, so.
Oh, very keyed on, dude. That'd be awesome.
All right. So I actually have a list of the speakers that are going to have there.
Perfect.
I'm trying to think how I would get this shared onto the screen. In the meantime, if there's anything else we want to talk about Calibri Fest, I'll try and figure this out.
Just that, you know, anybody that's listening, it's a great, you know, 3-day event. Even if you don't come for the full 3 days, like we, Nate and I are, just come down for Saturday to get the talks, get a lot of information about the captive side of keeping things and just other related topics along those lines. And, you know, just meet and greet. You know, typically, herpers are kind of stereotypically grouped as, you know, kind of introverted, weird. I think we're now we're reversing that mold, but in the most part, in many aspects, it's true. That's why stereotypes are stereotypes, because there's aspects of it that's true. You know, I'm relatively introverted, but I'm amped up. I'm ready to just I'm ready to talk snakes about with anybody.
Yeah, and speaking of talking snakes, here I managed to get the list pulled up. So,
Oh yeah.
As of the moment, the first speaker is kind of TBA, but they still have the subject, which is basically how to get little tiny colubrids started up, which is legitimately kind of tricky at times. So,
yeah,
talk about the tiniest little tubes trying to eat. So,
it's one thing that's swayed me off of you know, rat snakes and, you know, corn snakes. Just little worms.
Yeah, even to this day, I still prefer to get something that's a little bit older, just because I don't want to deal with a anorexic noodle. So,
no, and that's what kind of sways me off. Even Lampropeltis, God forbid, I start liking some of the Mex or Alterna. Just God forbid.
Yeah. Then so they're still. I don't know if they've actually officially announced the first speaker yet, but that's the first. That's what the first panel is going to be about. Second panel will be by Sarah Moore Straley of Sarah's Snake Shop, and it'll be about morph magic, the art and science of maintaining morphs in colubrid culture. So I personally, not too much of a morph guy. I kind of dig some morphs of some species, but there's plenty of people out there who are really into morphs, and that really does help drive the economy of herpetoculture. So that would be a good talk to have.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. I'm the same way. I'm more just about the species or subspecies rather than the morph they have. I guess one random tangent is like you know, Trans-Pecos rat snakes. I like the blonde phase of those.
Those are good.
Those are very pretty snakes.
Yeah, and then third speaker, Chris Montrez of Dark Horse Herpetoculture. Unlocking the world of locality keeping. Defining locality is a starting project. Now, if Jacob Ross was going to this, this would be the panel he'd be nerding out the most about, going into he wouldn't be going to counties. He'd be going to township specifications.
Oh, dude. Yeah. People get really hyped up on it. This, I'm excited about Chris too. This would be a good talk. They all will, but this one's definitely up there.
Yeah. And like I said, very early on, I'm getting some type locality, county locality, Florida Kings from Zach. So I obviously kind of dig localities a little bit just because I view them as kind of Mother Nature or God Almighty's version of morph breeding. It's like using the natural laboratory to bring out all natural morphs, not these GMO morphs like Super Mojave Latte Macchiato Ball Python or whatever it is.
Yeah, I mean, look at freaking Jasper County corn snakes. You know, what's the club that people always talk about?
Is it Hunt Club?
Yeah, so some Hunt Club, and how, you know, like Okatee, whatever, and how that's been refined. So yeah, there's a lot that can go on with locality breeding as well.
Yeah. So. And then we'll have a lunch break after that, so don't worry, we're not going to starve to death listening to these panels. I mean, I probably have the Colorwork stores to survive that, but I digress. Then fourth panel, but be Dr. Zach Whiteman, DVM, conservation herpetoculture. And we talk about egg binding and colubrids, so causes and ways to avoid dystocia in the first place. So that's actually a really good panel to have, because I've actually lost a colubrid to egg binding. I've lost Pantherophis catas malmorum, a thorn scrub rat, a female thorn scrub rat snake to that.
Oh man. Yeah, so, that's a bummer.
Yeah, that's obviously a good speech to have, because that can absolutely devastate a breeding project if you're just a small scale, like a 1.1 or 1.2, that could absolutely throw off your breeding project.
Oh yeah, years down the toilet. And you know, if you scale it up, obviously the loss is a little bit less waning, but it still sucks. You don't want to lose animals. And you know, this is something you deal with when you have animals en masse or even smaller scale.
Yeah.
Like yourself and whatnot.
Yeah. And even outside the economic importance of that, there's also the fact that it's just for the snake's own well-being and health and happiness. Because I imagine it obviously will kill a female snake, but I imagine it'll put them through a lot of stress and pain and discomfort for a while before it finally causes them to turn over. So,
yeah, it's definitely a topic that needs to be talked on about a bit more commonly in the forefront, because it happens more often than you would think.
Yeah. And then the fifth panel is going to be hosted by Kayla Martin of Infrared Reptiles and Sarah Morstraley of Sarah Snake Shop, again, exploring the role of women in the colubrid snake community. So
I mean that.
Yeah. I'm a guy, I don't really have much to say on that.
Yeah.
I'm going to try and choose my words carefully so I don't come across as a pig, but I'm kind of like,
what's the hate?
I'm kind of like, so you breed snakes differently than men do? You sell snakes differently than men do? I don't know. Maybe I'll learn something new. I don't know, but
who knows? I like that though, because I mean, I guess predominantly we were male heavy hobby,
true.
And I guess we still are, but now obviously a lot more female influences in the hobby nowadays, which is fantastic to see. You know, we're not we're not exclusive, we're inclusive to it all.
Yeah, like even that little rant I went on half a second ago is like, I don't care either way. If you're I'm all for having more women in the reptile hobby. It's more people in the hobby in general. It's going to bring even more people in, so the more the merrier. So then I'll have a little afternoon break. Then the second to last speaker be Matt Most of Sarpa Mitra. So one of the hosts of Colubra Fest is going to be doing a panel on, so you want to start a project, strategies for developing a new colubrid species in herpetoculture, culture, which another really interesting talk. So
yeah, And he's definitely the man to have a talk on that. I mean, he's a legend. So, you know, say he's a legend in the hobby.
Yeah. And it's also really an important thing to do because there could be like an imports from some country that is kind of intermittently importing and could eventually get shut down from. And then there's no more imports of that particular colubrid. It could be really important to actually get what little we get in to get started so we actually have those for the future.
Oh, dude, there's so many things that can go down with this topic. So many rabbit holes, you know. Like you said, yeah, strong, healthy gene pull from. Where do you want to go with the project? Line breeding or just bringing more new blood into it? I mean, there's so many. So that's going to be fantastic.
Yeah. And then the final panel will be with Joe DiStefano of Colubrid Corruption Podcast and Amy and Rob Zirkle of Zirkle Reptile Company, reflecting on the evolution of colubrid keeping, past, present, and future perspectives, which I haven't really delved into the history of colubrid keeping. So that would be a pretty interesting panel because I'm a white guy from the Midwest. Of course I dig it history, so any type of history. So
it's in your gene, man. No, but that's a good finale. And with Joe and his podcast, I have not heard any episodes yet. So I will hopefully either catch up or at least try to hear a couple because I'll probably listen to a few on the
car ride over to Indianapolis just so I'm not completely going into like a caveman, like, huh? They talk about wheel down?
yeah, exactly. Yeah, that'd be cool. Yeah, I mean, overall, great panelist for Saturday. This is gonna be awesome. A lot of obviously people get your notepad or get your phones out for this. You know, there's a lot of knowledge is gonna be dropped that day.
Yeah.
It's too much.
Yeah, but like I said, with the herp picking stuff up, I'm actually going to try and budget for this because I have a few things coming up down the pipe. So
yeah, you do, and they're approaching fast. So
yeah,
it'll be tough, man.
Speaking of which, do you want to talk about potentially going down to Snake Road sometime in October?
Yeah, so you know, for a lot of Illinois herpers and just Midwestern herpers, there's always that pilgrimage that we plunge into around early to mid October in southern Illinois, part of the Shawnee National Forest, where there's I feel bad for not knowing the actual road, but it's sectioned off to vehicular traffic. So the snakes can migrate back to their bluffs, to their, you know, hibernacula. And, you know, people go there to, you know, walk the road and just see snakes galore. It's always a blast. It's definitely just kind of like Colubrid Fest. It's definitely a lot of the people, human aspect of just going there, just meeting with, you know, herpers and, you know, people that like nature and connecting with them while we walk and, you know, see snakes. So, I mean, what more can you ask for? And you haven't been there yourself, so.
I know. I feel like a heretic for being from the Midwest and being a herb guy. I've never gone there, so. I have committed some grave heresy.
Yeah, we're going to have to change that. So that should be fun if we can plan that out.
You know, kind of be my Midwestern reptile baptism, so.
Yes, you will be blessed with 1,000 cottonmouths.
I mean, I've already found cottonmouths in the South before, so.
Well, you'll get your Midwestern cottonmouths.
Yeah. The ever-elusive Midwestern cottonmouth that's somehow in every single lake, river, creek, and pond throughout the entirety of the Midwest.
Has them, supposedly. I never seen one, but people swear by it.
Yeah. But yeah, maybe after we're done recording, I can talk about arranging the actual date, stuff like that. So,
yeah, man, I'm down. But I mean, I don't really have any more points to talk on for like Colubrid Fest and just our side quests. I mean, I'm amped up. I can't believe how fast it's approaching. So, I definitely got to get my my gear's turning for redding and everything. I have a 20-gallon tank, and then obviously I have, you know, some backup what do you call it? Backup six quart tubs just in case.
Yeah. But
I'm excited. I'm excited to potentially own a little dude, a little noodle. You
know? Yeah. Same here. But speaking of herb trips, like I think I officially mentioned it for the first time in the last Reptile Ramblings, was I'm going to Costa Rica in November, and you suggested I get a field guide, which I obviously should have. So mm-hmm. I went on Amazon the other day, and I got this puppy right here.
That's the one, dude. That's the one.
And I pick up the accompanying amphibian one. Why did I blank on amphibians of all things? I don't know. But yeah, I picked the amphibian copy of that as well.
Oh, it's tough when it comes to the neotropics and amphibians. There's just so many species. But yes, dude, this is
I just need to memorize which ones I can't lick.
All of them, dude. All of them. Yeah. That's gonna be a fun trip for you. And like Costa Rica, what a blast! So you're saying you're mainly gonna stay on the Pacific side of things, or
I think it's more like Central Highlands. Let me pull up the actual hotel
itinerary. Well,
so first few nights we'll be staying at a particular ecotourism resort. Let's see here. Let's see if I can pull it up. But I was also looking at camera gear. So actually, because I was planning on taking my phone for most of it, but
yeah.
I really want to get a good camera with a good macro lens so I can actually get some decent close-ups.
Okay, so yeah, man.
I was actually just Googling up all the affordable good options, but okay. So the first few nights we're going to be staying at the Arenal Lodge. So it's actually in a volcanic state park, near a volcanic state Ooh. Park. So apparently the hotel has like 2,000 acres of property around that you could go exploring on. So that's going to be a lot of sleepless
nights for sure. You're not sleeping in your hotel room for sure.
Yeah. So yeah, there's an idea of where it's at.
Oh, neat.
Venado. Yeah. Well, speaking of pronouncing that Spanish, I actually have been going on Duolingo for the past few weeks, just trying to brush up. So.
Yes, man. Especially for food. Food, knowing food in Spanish is very important. That's probably the most important
aspect. Leche, carne, pan, agua.
These are the essentials. Bread, water.
Un perro, un gato, un caballo.
Well, hopefully you're not eating cats and dogs there. Hopefully not. But
or horses.
Horse. Well, horse, who knows, man? Who knows?
Yeah. But okay. See here, so... Yeah, that's more like the north central part of Costa Rica. But we have talked about going to up here into this part on the Pacific side, looking for Crotalus simus, so like the Central American rattlesnakes. And apparently there are some cantils, so that's an Achisodon. I can't remember the exact species, but that do get all the way down to the very northwest part of Costa Rica, but the guys who are guiding it have never seen them. So, I mean, it's like, I've actually asked the guy and he says like, oh, it's like a 5-10% chance you might see him. But other than that, but yeah, then,
that's so funny, man. Like I need to do research on that. Cause like cottonmouths, stupid common in our latitudes and lower and whatnot, but cantils, I don't know what's so different about them. Cause they're just a cottonmouth with a different face paint, right? And yet they're so.
Okay, now the Central American cottonmouth, they look like a Halloween. The cantils, they look like a Halloween cottonmouth. So
they look very sinister and just they got this matte finish to them. Like they got a completely different paint job. But in almost everywhere they occur, they're so obscure, it's like uncommon. It's just like, I wonder what they're doing so different that makes them be like that.
Yeah.
Because it's but, everywhere they occur, you know? It's just weird.
Yeah, but then a few nights after that, like the last two nights, we're going to go to a hotel near San Jose. So more of the Central Highlands. And apparently it's going to one place that is really good for finding pit vipers. So I don't know where exactly around here, but we're going to be going. So it's more like north central and central part of Costa Rica.
Oh, dude, regardless, as long as you're in natural areas, natural habitat, yeah. It's going to be herps galore. Like,
yeah.
You're going to best me for sure.
Yeah. The one downside is I don't think I'll see any crocodilians. I might see a spectacle caiman, maybe.
Yeah.
Won't be going to any place that has the cutest, it looks like. And we won't be going down off the Atlantic coast, so we probably won't find Central American Bushmaster, which freaking dream species of snake, if you ask me. Yeah. Well, any of the Bushmasters. Apparently blackheads do get up into like the extreme South Central Highlands, but any type of Bushmaster would have been a really cool thing to find.
Oh man, yeah, no worries. Another time, another place. But hey, don't luck out on a cutest just yet. You know, it's surprising how far inland they'll use the inland river and creek systems. You know, apparently they can go quite inland. Oh, dude, yes, just gorgeous.
Yeah but like I said about they even call it a Mexican moccasin. So that's kind of, but yeah. Let's see here. As like I said, it looks, at least that particular one, and the pictures in the guide are a lot more orangey, so they look a bit more like I said, Halloween face. Like look at that. That's an October 31st cottonmouth if you ever seen one.
Yeah, I mean, oh, just the face, man. That face, the war paint. They kind of have kind of a ridge nose look going on, just a little bit.
Yeah.
But then you see darker ones like to your left, like adults, and like. Phew.
Yeah, but I've always noticed that about cottonmouths is the way they hold their head and the way they're patterning on their faces. Those kind of look like they're turning their nose up at you a little bit, like.
Yeah,
like there's some racial aristocrat mingling with the common folk. It's like, oh, Cornelius, the Pauls are eating meat pies again. How barbarous.
Don't tread on me. I may not have a rattle, but do not tread. Yes. I'm excited for you, dude. This is going to be fun.
But that's a little Costa Rica trip over with. Hopefully we can do a recap episode when I get back. So.
Oh, yeah, dude. Maybe after the show, after Kluberfest, we'll do another recap, you know.
Yeah. Actually, I was just rummaging around my room. I found my old original mic. So I now have two mics. So maybe like Saturday night, we could do a little bit of a recap so far. Like a part one, and then do another recording later. So we get, and just, I'll just splice them together and we'll have one full Kluberfest episode.
Oh yeah, man. I'm down for some R&R, some intermission. I'm down for it.
Yeah. Hey, is there anything else you want to talk about on air?
No, man. It's just good stuff. I think we, you know, provided quite a lot of info and just great tidbits out there. So really hyped up to see you, dude. I know it's going to be a blast.
All right. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for tuning in to the show. Like I said, I'm Nate. You can find me on Instagram at n.j.truax, or you can find it on the Crocast podcast official Instagram page, which I believe is just Crocast_podcast.
Okay, you're really good with that. And I'm Brian McDowell. As always, you can find me on Instagram at don_bond_junior. So D-O-N underscore D-O. Oh, wait. Don, by the way, don_bond_junior. You'll find me. You'll see my face. Yeah. Just give a follow.
And with that, we hope to see you next time. and maybe even at Gloopurfest.
We'll see you. Bye-bye.